City Current. Produced by Dakota Media Access. In-depth discussion with Bismarck and Mandan city officials. Watch on Government Access Channel 602 HD or tune in to Radio Access 102.5 FM. Always local, always current.
Welcome to City Current. It's Wednesday, June 12th, and we're here in the studios at Dakota Media Access. I'm Mary Van Sickle, and I'm here with Jason Timonic.
Hi, Mary. How are you?
Pretty good. Jason's from the city of Bismarck, and as always with City Current, we're here to talk about what happened at the City Commission meeting last night.
You bet. Sounds good.
Get in a little more depth. Mm-hmm. So one item that we wanted to talk about on the consent agenda, just a quick mention, and that is that the Public Works has a building for sale. Mm-hmm. Late last year, they purchased the Billington Salvage Yard, which is adjacent to Public Works. Mm-hmm. And there's a leftover building on that property.
Yeah, it's the old shop or the old storage facility or something along those lines. And there have been some inquiries on the next use of the building. City of Bismarck Public Works has no interest in it, so it's up for sale if anybody's interested. That would encourage them to either stop by the Public Works building on South 26th Street or give them a call at 355-1700.
All right.
And this would be just like any other city process. There's a public bid involved. And if anyone is interested, feel free to call or stop by with questions.
Hopefully they can put it to good use.
Yep.
Again. So moving into the regular agenda, one of the first items on the agenda was a presentation about the Tyler Cooley sewer system. Mm-hmm. Can you explain where that lands, actually?
Sure. It's the undeveloped area of the Tyler Cooley, so Northwest Bismarck. And really what we're talking about would be between the existing edge of Promontory Point up in through the Cooley area, up around to the Eagle Crest subdivisions. So a good section of terrain through there, and certainly some challenges with the topography and the different networks of coulees and drainage ways and things like that. So one of the engineers from Apex Engineering provided three different options for the city to consider. And as development occurs in this area, we will use one of those options and then implement a strategy on the best way to get services in and out of that new neighborhood as it continues to develop.
Would you say that most of this property right now is undeveloped,
raw? Yes, okay. Very much so. It's natural terrain, no homes. There's homes in the area. There's homes that can see this area, but there's no utilities, no services, or anything like that at this time. It would not even be annexed to the city, so technically it still is in Burleigh County.
Just trying to get out ahead of it a little bit and this is anticipate what the cost may be and what it's going to look like.
Very common for the city to do utility master plans, stormwater master plans of this nature, especially when we're in areas where there might be some topographic challenges. Mm-hmm. So it's good to know we've got options, and our engineers will certainly work with the engineering team that put the study together.
Well, and we've just talked about a couple of developments that are being proposed up in that area. I don't know if it's necessarily adjacent to this, but we're talking about Elk Ridge
and Eagle Crest. I believe it's 8th edition.
Okay.
We're both approved.
So they're
recently
right on the heels of this whole thing.
They are. Okay. Yeah. And there will be others that will continue to follow. There may be some more developments in Promontory Point and some of those areas. So it's looking at all the options and knowing that we've got a good series of choices to choose from.
And there's no deadline in front of you right now. It's all development driven. As these things are developed and the load is increasing, then someone is going to have to pull the trigger on this.
Look at flow rates and how to get all the stuff to the right places.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, flowing downhill is always best, right?
Yep.
Also on the regular agenda last night, there was an appeal of a Board of Adjustment committee ruling. Mm-hmm. At their meeting, a homeowner came forward and wanted to put a variance in place to put a larger accessory building.
An oversized accessory building. I think the initial request was 2,400 square feet. The ordinance allows up to 1,200 square feet. The Board of Adjustment acted at their May meeting, I believe, and compromised and suggested 1,400 square feet would be their comfort level. The property owners requested that the variance be reconsidered and allowed up to 1,600 square feet for an accessory building. In the end, the commission decided to overturn the Board of Adjustment's decision and granted the variance request. So the homeowners will be allowed to put up a 1,600 square foot outbuilding It's an area south of Bismarck, just outside city limits, but it's still in the ETA within the city's jurisdiction.
Sure.
So,
and it was a split vote.
It was.
And I think that's interesting to note. I think it was Commissioner Guy who mentioned her concern. She voted against.
Correct.
And her concern was that if they move forward and overturn the Board of Adjustments decision, that now the 1600 becomes a bit of a precedence as we move forward on accessory buildings.
Right. And the city staff had put together a compilation of all the permitted accessory buildings in this particular subdivision dating back to the late 80s. And there was a wide range of what looked to be small sheds, you know, less than 200 square feet, all the way up to some as high as, I believe, 1,200 square feet, or there might even been one at 1,400 square feet that was permitted. The applicants did mention that they were aware of one that is 1,600 square feet, but that one didn't show up on the data that city staff had collected. So, Commissioner Guy, it does bring a valid point that this sets a new standard for others in the area that might be considering outbuildings. But we also understand that people have a lot of things that, you know, warrant storage in a building. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
The bigger the building, the more stuff you get.
We'll watch this as it goes forward, too. But that decision is done.
The appeal is done. The commission granted the request, and now they move forward with obtaining building permits and getting things moving forward in that direction.
And again, we're mentioning this. We don't need to talk about who the person was or where it's really located. That isn't the point. What we want to talk about is the appeal process and how this moved forward from the Board of Adjustment. The homeowners felt they wanted to take it into an appeal, and it went to the city commission level, and that is available for people and property owners.
Yeah, and it's not terribly common for the city commission to overturn Board of Adjustment decisions. It has happened a couple times in the last few months. Of course, we've talked about the undersized lot on North Mandan Street. That was another appeal that was overturned. So the process does work when the situation is right. Now, that's not to say every appeal is going to be overturned, but in certain circumstances, there are unique reasons for decisions to be made.
The inner workings. Yes. Another project that came back to the commission in a form of a public hearing last night was the Clear Sky Addition.
Right.
This was slated for your last meeting, but due to an error on the department side of not informing the neighbors that this was happening, they delayed it till last night.
Postponed the public hearing. So
yeah, that's a big development of. And its full form is
220 plus. Some lots, right? And we're just on the east side of 52nd Street, about a half mile south of Main Avenue. So we're between Main Avenue and Apple Creek Road. That's a mile section on 52nd Street. So this is an urban density R5 single family subdivision with, I believe, two lots will be zoned for public use, one for stormwater, and then there's also a park that will be part of the development. It'll be on the east side of the park, or the east side of the neighborhood. This one had kind of some unique features to it. There were some challenges getting utilities to the site. There's some challenges with the annexation route. And of course, the neighborhood to the north, which is outside city limits. And for all intents and purposes, it is a rural subdivision. It's on its own water and septic systems.
Larger lots.
It gets services from the sheriff and rural fire if necessary. However, this one will be annexed, Clear Sky Addition will be annexed to the city, so it will look and perform just like an urban subdivision. You'll see sidewalks, curb and gutter, smaller lots, although many of the lots are larger to help buffer and transition from the north through the subdivision into the south, and particularly along the northern tier of Clear Sky Addition. Those lots were oversized, particularly in depth, to allow for the existing trees to remain in place and then for the developers to put in a couple more rows of trees to help screen the rural neighbors to the north from the new urban neighbors that will be developing and building over the years on the south side.
I think the developer mentioned that they were allowed up to, I think it was 340 lots, right around there, but they adjusted the size of the lots. So there was a lower density and they came up with the 227.
Right. So. Yeah. And so when we say R5 residential, what that really means is the R is indicative of residential and then the 5. Excuse me, the 5 means 5 units per acre. So you could build up to 5 homes per per acre.
Okay.
Most times that doesn't happen. In general, in the newer neighborhoods, our density ranges between probably 1.5 to 3.5 in a lot of cases. In the older parts of town where we've got smaller lots, more on the gridded network, you're closer to that 3.5 to 4.5. Okay. But very rarely do we actually hit that
five units
per acre.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. There was some concern and some of the discussion focused around the whole donut hole type planning, mm-hmm. and which isn't advisable. But as I understood it, then the developer is responsible for bringing in the utilities to this land. So they're going over vacant property to get into this development,
right.
which is a considerable investment.
It is. And part of the reason for that, I guess the primary reason for that is that with our growth management plan, we have tiers where we look at the most easily serviced areas in the community, those areas that are directly adjacent to city limits. And although this is directly adjacent and it is annexed or will be annexed as part of this process, it wasn't in an area that we can get services to immediately.
Right.
So with that information back to the developer, the message really was, if you want to do this now, you need to get services here on your own. And the development group said, we can do that.
Okay.
So it's kind of a unique situation here. We, as the city, put a bit of a challenge in front of them, and they found a way to overcome that challenge. And we're going to wish them the best of luck as they go forward and develop.
Yeah.
It's my understanding that the lots that are here will be available to home builders in the region, you know,
so anybody can
buy and build. You know, we're not quite there yet. Obviously, there's some roads and streets and water and sewer and things like that that need to be happening yet this year. But looking forward, this will be an opportunity for other builders to get into a neighborhood and put together some homes.
First phase was how many lots?
I want to say it was less than 30, 25, 28 lots, something like that.
Yeah, when we talk about the 227, that's going to take years.
Total build out.
To develop, so that's not happening immediately.
Yeah,
it'll happen in phases.
I would expect this to be, you know, 5 to 10 years before we're even close to full build out.
Well, I think one other thing we should mention is that a lot of the neighboring properties to the north in that rural residential area, most of their objections were based on traffic and the intersection of 52nd and Main Avenue.
Right.
And one point that was brought up at the end, I think it was Commissioner Zanker brought up, a city engineer, to talk about the improvements that we might be seeing on Main Avenue in this, actually right in this area.
Right.
The half-cent sales tax that the city approved or the residents approved last fall are allowing for some infrastructure improvements, some road projects, and Main Avenue is one of them. And this could very well help that issue forward.
Right, from Main Avenue all the way out to 66th Street is part of that list of roadways that could be improved. The list has never been prioritized. So at this point, it's a fairly fluid list. There's never been one project that has come to the top. In all fairness, we just started collecting sales tax on April 1st. So it's not that we've got the money to spend yet, but we will certainly look at all the roadways in that list when we start to prioritize which projects happen and when.
Mm-hmm. Okay, sounds good. Well, it'll come back to us when we start talking about that prioritized list.
Definitely.
Yeah. Also on the agenda last night was the final consideration, public hearing on the off-highway vehicles riding around on city streets.
Yep.
So it moved forward, and then we got consensus. I think it was a unanimous vote.
It was. There was some discussion at the table. There was some discussion from business owners that are selling these types of vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
And we also had a few written letters not necessarily supporting this and having some concerns about the types of vehicles, the safety that goes along with them, and also potentially the noise. So as with all street legal vehicles, there's rules in place. There's state regulations.
Yeah.
There's local regulations. So anybody that is interested in driving these pieces of equipment on the roadway, it is your responsibility to know the rules. You've got to have blinkers, roll cages,
safety belts,
mirrors, all the standard things that you would find on a vehicle, a normal vehicle. Mm-hmm. You would want to see them on these vehicles as well. So, and to the distributors, to the sellers of these machines, they did say, yes, we have a responsibility here too to make sure that we teach our customers the right way to handle these things as well. So,
well, it was a public hearing. I was surprised there was one individual who got up and spoke about that he'd been riding on the city streets already for a few years and didn't realize
five,
it was
5 years, I think he said, as I'm sitting next to the city attorney and she mentions, oh my gosh, he just admitted to this. So no harm, no foul. He even said he had been pulled over at one point by a local police officer and said, you know, these things aren't legal yet. It's kind of funny, even after the meeting last night, our office received a call right away this morning. So can I drive it now?
So how soon do you anticipate this could be illegal?
I believe everything is in place now. So the ordinance, you know, there's some paperwork to go along with the ordinance and some implementation that goes along with this. But our police department is well aware of this. They've been part of the discussion from the very beginning. So as these things become more common, I guess just be mindful. As an operator, you, of course, have to follow all the rules.
Well, all drivers need to be conscious that this is now going to be happening. So everybody be conscious of that.
For other motorists, be on the lookout for a new type of vehicle on city streets.
Yeah. But again, they have to have blinkers, lights, the whole thing. And I was surprised to hear that some of these vehicles are bigger than some of the small vehicles that are already on the road.
Yeah.
So
there's a lot of different.
Be interesting.
A lot of different vehicles out there already, so this adds to the variety.
I think it should be mentioned, too, that this ordinance has been mashed around for a while, and this ordinance does match up, as I understand, with Mandan and Lincoln.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's
so
more
it's a
of
consistent
a,
law.
It's more of an urban approach as opposed to Burley County, where they've got ditches and rural sections to be operating these things in. So we had to look at some different urban constraints as opposed to riding them in the ditches in the rural areas.
Absolutely. Well, at the end of your regular agenda last night, Bisman Transit was up, and they had a couple of items that had quite a lengthy discussion. One of them, the first one, was a continuation of the Green Route, which is the route out to Mary and United Tribes.
Right.
I was a little surprised. I have to be honest. I was surprised at the overwhelming support because in the past, it had not been received quite that way. It had been tried, a pilot project. It didn't work out quite well, but it seems to have flipped a little bit.
It has, and I think that goes in a large part to the hard work of Roy Rickert, the director at Transit, and also some key people at University of Mary, making sure that the students are engaged and aware of what's available to them. It's my understanding that they can, as part of a meal plan, work a bus ticket or a bus pass into that meal program as well. So lots of options for the students
more
to get
awareness
involved.
That they're aware that this is available.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it was interesting for Roy to mention last night, as we know from recent meetings and recent developments, that the University of Mary has purchased the Bismarck-Burley Public Health Building on the corner of 5th and Front. That is also a transit stop or a transit hub.
Right across the street.
For a lot of switching. What we've learned is that UMary will be putting engineering students into that building as soon as this fall. So recognizing students will have a need to get back and forth from the downtown campus to the traditional campus south of
Seems to
south
be a
campus.
Relationship there that could be a...
Seems like a great opportunity.
Yeah.
So looking forward to that. Roy had some good numbers there. The ridership isn't quite where it used to be, but it's back on the up, climb, so that's good. Raising awareness, making the routes more accessible, it's all helping.
And it was a unanimous vote to continue that, as I recall. Yeah, so it was good. The second part of Bisman Transit's request last night, was for additional funding. And they've been in front of the commission a number of times, and the Mandan City Commission as well, talking about the deficits that they're facing. This isn't new information.
Right.
This has been coming for quite a while.
Yep, they've been telegraphing this for the last couple of years, that if we don't change, if we don't increase ridership or find new funding sources, that this was going to be
some
happening.
Additional changes are going to have to be made.
Right.
So they were looking for a boost this year or additional funds this year as well before the end of the year.
Right.
And then for 2020 as well.
Yep. That's right. And so the direction from the commission was for the budget committee, which consists of our city administrator, Keith Hunke, city commissioner, Steve Marquardt, our finance director, and myself, we will take this under advisement and consideration during the budget process, which starts the first part of July. It's really started in many ways internally. We will get more engaged with the departments and others that rely on the city budget as July gets going here. So certainly an understanding, you know, transit is a unique system. Nationwide, most transit systems are
subsidized.
They're not running in the black.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's a very fair statement, and Bismarck's is no different. But if we can increase ridership, That will increase revenue opportunities, and it'll make things a lot easier for people that rely on transit.
Yeah. Well, and this will come back again, probably to the commission, obviously, for action. And they didn't take action last night other than sending it to budget.
Direct the budget committee to get after it this year and see what we can do.
Yeah. Again, a long meeting last night. Lots of business taken care of. So we're going to go off the agenda a little bit and talk about a meeting that is scheduled for tomorrow up at KLJ. Now, again, I just want to remind anyone who's listening that we're recording this on June 12th.
Right. Today's Wednesday.
Yeah.
The meeting's on Thursday.
The meeting is on
Thursday evening.
Yep. Yeah. And that will be a public input meeting on the improvements options for 43rd Avenue.
Right.
This is a big deal.
It is. The project is necessary with all the activity that's happening. Of course, the traffic on 43rd is only increasing. And KLJ was brought in to put together some design concepts. Mm-hmm. And what everyone will have a chance to look at tomorrow is what we call a three-lane section with potential roundabouts or a five-lane section with traffic signals. And really what a three-lane section means is there's one lane in each direction and a center turn lane. And then a five-lane section would be similar to what you see on Century Avenue. Two lanes in each direction, center turn lane, potentially medians, traffic signals would be a part of that. So different options for consideration. And as always, it's good to have options. But anybody that's interested, has thoughts or ideas, wants to provide feedback and input, we'd encourage you to go to the KLJ office building. They're located on Coleman Street, just north of 43rd Avenue. So very, very close to the project area.
Right? It's a beautiful building.
Nice logo on the side. Yeah. So if you haven't been in there, this will be an opportunity to go see what the building's got to offer and learn something about how the city plans to make improvements with 43rd.
And this is in reference to that half-cent sales tax, again, that the citizens voted on in November. This was one of the list of road projects that need attention.
Correct. From Washington Street all the way over to Centennial, 43rd is on the list. So that is, if you add up all of the sections of 43rd Avenue, that is by far one of the biggest, if not the biggest project on that list
of roadway improvements. There's a lot of new commercial activity up there and some that has been established for a few years. But certainly a lot of residents are using that as a east-west travel route.
Classified as an arterial roadway. Mm-hmm. And for years, when I was in the planning office, I would often tell people 43rd Avenue is our next Century Avenue.
Yeah.
So we all know what Century looks like. If anybody can remember back 40 years ago, Century Avenue was a two-lane gravel road at one point. So obviously it's growing based on all the improvements and activity in the area.
Absolutely. And then adding to that is the fire station that sits right at that one of those main intersections. You know, so there's a lot of activity up there. And if people are interested, want to have a voice and how it moves forward, this is the time to do it.
We would encourage you to get engaged.
Yeah.
Please.
Absolutely. And this is a public input meeting. No action is going to be taken tomorrow night.
Correct.
But it is an opportunity.
Sharing of information, listening to feedback.
Yep. Give feedback on what you see. I'm assuming it'll come in front of the commission again for any final design work.
I would anticipate some type of a report or a recommendation from our engineering staff based on what we learn.
All right.
So.
Sounds good. Well, let's end our time together talking about the strategic plan update. You had a special meeting yesterday afternoon. The commission had a meeting at 3 o'clock just to get this update.
Right. And the primary goal of that special meeting was just to have some time with the consultant, Jason Gray, with the J.D. Gray Group. They were brought in about a year ago to walk us through this process of what it takes to build a strategic plan and update our strategic plan from 2012. Working with Jason and the team that he's put together has just been a fantastic experience for us as city staff and for project members.
Yeah, Commissioner Guile said last night she was jealous that she wasn't included in the committee.
I thought that was interesting. Because the co-chairs or co-liaisons are Commissioner Greg Zenker and Commissioner Sean Oban. Mm-hmm. And they've been very supportive and very engaged throughout this process. So it's nice to know that we've got two commissioners that are intimately aware of the strategic plan and how that's going to roll out going forward. Next steps, as far as the plan goes, where we are right now is we're at the 95% draft. So we're basically just doing some final edits, tweaking to any of the punctuation and things like that.
Sure.
But the plan for all intents and purposes is fairly well crafted. So Jason Gray will be back in 2 weeks in front of the commission again, and the action at that time would either be to adopt or approve or accept the plan, whatever the right word is for the commissioners on that at that meeting. But for us, that's really the next chapter in this project, because then we start with the implementation. How do we get all these projects started? How do we get some of these things moving and start to really make the improvements that we're looking for?
So, nice.
But there's another little piece in the middle.
Yes.
We've got a special meeting next week, Tuesday on June 18th.
Okay.
And the call for projects. So we've talked about this. The call for projects was to support the strategic plan, and it was an opportunity for the public to tell us what they wanted to see and how they wanted to see Bismarck get better. We received 13 applications, which was tremendous. I told some people along the way, my biggest fear is that we would get zero applications. So for everybody that took the time to put together an application, thank you very much. It was very encouraging to read some of these ideas and know that there are people in this community that have some genuine interest in making Bismarck even better. Mm-hmm. For the two projects that we were not able to forward, they were similar to a proposal from a consultant for select services. And although those projects are very strong ideas, very wonderful concepts, we have a different process that we would need to go through if we were to engage that type of work.
They're not dead. They're just going to kind of linger out there for a while.
And we made the commissioners aware of them because they are strong ideas, and we don't want them to be muted, but this just isn't the right vehicle to bring that forward. So on the 18th, what we will have is presentations from the 11 project teams that did put together a proposal.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just really, really excited to have the commissioners hear from the community, hear some of the ideas that are out there, and see if we can kickstart some of these projects in the near future.
Yeah, this sounds pretty exciting. And full disclosure, Dakota Media Access has submitted a call for projects.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that we've been talking about here for a long time, and that is a relocation of our operation in the downtown area. And so we've submitted a proposal, and we will be prepared on June 18th to present. We have our 10 minutes, and we will talk with the commission at that point and tell our story and see where it goes.
So. Right, and no decisions will be made on the 18th, but we will have a discussion item on the following meeting on the 25th, so 2 weeks from yesterday. We'll have an opportunity for the commissioners to talk about all the projects, give them some time to, you know, go back and reread the proposals and think about what they heard, and then decide on the 25th if any of the projects are of value or are the type of projects that the commissioners would choose to support. That would be the decision-making time, because from there we will springboard directly into budget 2020. So if there are projects that the commission would like to support financially, it will be the charge of the budget committee to try and find a way to make that happen.
Well, it's pretty darned exciting.
It is a great time. There's some really cool stuff happening. Yeah. It's exciting for us. We're in a driver's seat. We're in a position to encourage and foster a lot of these conversations that are out there. Mm-hmm. Now they're becoming more public, and we can hopefully help.
Taking shape.
Getting these things to see the light and come to fruition. It'd be fantastic.
And some of these projects, as I understand, are going to be shared with other entities, political subdivisions, potentially in the community as well.
Right. We as the city know that we may not be in the first position to make some of these things happen, but if we can connect dots or connect teams and connect partnerships and really help get those things going, that's a great place to be too.
All right.
So
next time we meet, then we'll be right after the commission hears it officially, and we'll be discussing.
We can follow up on the 26th and see what we learned.
Sounds good.
Be great.
And looking forward to
it. Me too.
Thanks, Jason.
You bet. Thanks, Mary.
All right. And thank you for tuning in to this edition of City Current.
For more information on what was discussed in this episode of City Current, visit bismarcknd.gov or call 701-355-1300. If you have suggestions, comments, or issues you would like addressed in future episodes, contact us at info@freetv.org. This program airs on Government Access, Channel 2 and 602 in HD, or on Radio Access 102.5 FM. It's also available as a podcast on radioaccess.org and as a video viewing link at freetv.org. Thanks for tuning in to this edition of City Current.